Mr. Johnson.
I think what that amendment does is it does indeed open up municipals to a whole new regime of PUC regulation. It's more than just saying any existing PUC regulation that implements the statute we're now subject to as a municipal. I think it says now the PUC has the authority to promulgate new regulations under this statute and to make municipal entities subject to those regulations, and that is brand new. I mean, regardless of what's said here, the if adopted, the language of the statute would read, each qualifying retail utility shall be subject to the rules established under this article by the commission. So if the PUC, if this gets adopted, looks at this rule and says, well, now that we're governing a whole bunch of new municipal entities, we need a whole new regulatory scheme to deal with those municipals, this opens the door to that. Again, that's not only violative of the state constitution, it is a brand new regulatory scheme. It's separate and apart from the stated intention, which was simply to extend the renewable energy standards to all utilities. Part of that is not to make all utilities subject to PUC regulation without regard to the Colorado Constitution.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Is the term qualifying retail utility, is that only a Section 124 term, or is that used throughout Article 40? And I apologize for not knowing.
That's used in multiple places. But I think this is where it where the origin of that is.
Okay. Thank you.
Not sure where that leaves us, but we're on the question of single subject compliance, but it seems like it leaves us with the possibility of multiple subjects. if I'm following the discussion. But.
Well, I think if it's read in a read broadly, I think it does cause single subject problems. And reading simply the first couple of sentences in isolation, as this would amend them, the first two sentences of 124, it seems true that after this passed, each qualifying retail utility, which would include every retail electric service provider, including municipalities, would be subject to all PUC rules, which I think is beyond the stated intent. And I think would be a single subject problem. My question is whether that's the proper way to read it, or whether it should really be read that second sentence actually just means subject to the rules of 124, in which case then I think we're probably don't have a single subject problem.
Chairman, can I respond to Mr. Domenico? I mean, I think the way the language currently reads, and this is adoption of the previous language, shall be subject to the rules established under this article.
Right.
So.
And that's Article 4, or Title 40, Article 2.
Article 2. The intent, I'm again restating the intent is the narrow. That would be hopeful interpretation.
What is the?
I would argue with you on if you read it broadly, it would be multiple subjects. Likelihood.
Right, and I mean, would it raise constitutional issues about PUC interaction with municipal utilities?
You know,
the
that,
broader reading. I mean, I'm trying to figure out how certain it we could be that the narrow reading would be what our friends at the PUC would adopt and
well,
what courts would adopt.
Issue, the state constitutional issues were brought up several times, is a real one. It's a very debatable one. And there is the possibility that this provision would be deemed to be whole or in part unconstitutional. Don't think so.
Well, and I'm... sorry to interrupt, but I think it actually might help you in this discussion, the constitutional problem, in the sense that it would be the sort of thing that courts and therefore we would look at and say, well, the broad reading, since it would raise a constitutional problem, should not be the one we use to guide us, that we should be guided, understanding that, A, it's intended, the stated intent is for this to be read narrowly, it's at least ambiguous in context how broadly it should be read. Given that, it might raise constitutional problems if read broadly. Now, the opponents might say it still raises constitutional problems if it's read narrowly, but I think they'd be, it's the preferable reading constitutionally. So maybe then we can say, well, given that this, given all these issues with the broad reading, we should just accept that this is the narrow reading and go on that. Because I think if this is given the broader reading, I think I would vote that this violates the single subject rule.
Well, Mr. Domenico, I would agree with you wholeheartedly.
Well, that's good.
But number one, that's not the intent. We rarely do, but we are. That's certainly not the intent. And I will acknowledge that it is indisputable that the coverage of municipal utilities under all rules, the PUC, will raise a constitutional. Not going to predict the outcome of that issue, but it's indisputable that that issue will exist.
Mr. Ramey, help me with what I think is a related question. I'm just trying to understand kind of the next sentence that says, no additional regulatory authority of the commission other than that specifically contained in this section is provided or implied. I mean, the preceding sentence says each qualifying retail utilities is subject to the rules established under this article. The entire article. And then the very next sentence says, no additional regulatory authority of the PUC other than that contained in this section. And does that mean that we really are just limited to 124, that the reference to this article really just refers to the rulemaking authority of the PUC, which is under section 108, for example, but that there's no additional authority other than 124 that we're talking about?
I think that's correct, Mr. Hobbs. That is, of course, language that was there before, but we've kept it. And yes, I think that is the effect. We are not trying to expand anything outside of the scope of 42. And actually, I hadn't really thought about it until now, till you brought those two sentences together, but I would suggest that is the appropriate reading of the effect of this provision for the reasons you just stated and Mr. Domenico stated. Avoid what could easily become a constitutional issue.
Okay. Mr. Newman, yeah.
I guess I would start by saying maybe we're trying too hard to save this, and that the plain language in saying shall be subject to rules established under this article. And it could have been done in a way that would have avoided this problem, and we have what we have to read, and it creates this problem. But Article 2, if you look at the other parts, one of them deals with rules and the Commission's authority to promulgate rules, covering those subject to its jurisdiction. And one could argue that you would necessarily need to read the broader interpretation in order to affect the Renewable Energy Standard rulemaking. Because you still run into a problem coming back to 108 and the rulemaking authority and its limitations. And unless you modify the entire article, you can't affect the change they want.
Mr. Johnson.
I think even if we limited the authority of the PUC to the issues raised under Section 124, you're still opening up municipal entities to a whole host of regulations. Section 124 is a very lengthy section of several pages of powers that the PUC has to establish, to regulate rates, to discuss rate impacts, credits, and other things that are attendant to that section. So simply by saying, well, the PUC's powers would be limited to Section 124 doesn't really help because, again, right now the municipal entities self-report. They're not subject to any PUC oversight by the Constitution. So their compliance with renewable energy standards is all a matter of self-reporting and self-enforcement. So not only would they now be subject to PUC regulation, which is not necessary or even pertinent to the primary intention to make everybody subject to the same standard, it opens us up as municipals to a whole host of additional future regulations that the PUC might see fit to adopt if its powers are expanded. So I think this is clearly more than one subject. It's more than just making a uniform standard applicable to all utilities. It's clearly an expansion of PUC authority, which is not otherwise provided for and, as I said before, is unconstitutional.
Mr. Johnson, I should know this, but where in the Constitution – I mean, I'm reading Article 25, and I don't see the exemption for municipal utilities.
Let me get that. I've got a –
In the second paragraph?
In the second paragraph.
Okay. Provided, however, nothing shall affect the power of municipalities.
To exercise reasonable police and licensing power, nor their power to grant franchises, provided further that nothing herein shall be construed to apply to municipally owned utilities. So Article 25 creates the Public Utilities Commission and gives it a broad grant of authorities over public utilities, but the last sentence of the second paragraph says nothing herein shall be construed to apply to municipally owned utilities. And the exemption has been upheld numerous times by Colorado courts, recognizing the distinction between the police powers of a municipality and the statutory powers of the Public Utilities Commission.
So wouldn't it – and thank you for pointing that out. Depending on how the measure is interpreted, it could be unconstitutional.
And I'm not even getting to the constitutional aspects.
Right.
I realize that's not part of the
right.
board's function today. But it does illustrate that there is a complete – distinction between PUC powers and municipal powers, and this, without needing to affect its primary purpose of making a uniform standard, goes into that extra field of expanding the powers of the PUC, and that creates a single subject issue.
Thank you. Discussion by the board. I'm not sure I'm convinced that there's a single subject problem yet, but as best I can interpret it at this point, trying to digest all of this, I think that we're limited. I think we're confined to Section 124. I think everything, I'm not sure how to express the single subject. We may get to that in the staff draft, but if it looks to me like the staff draft may be accurate, I just can't necessarily say that there's two different unrelated subjects here, two or more. I probably could be persuaded otherwise, but.
Well, I think I'm, obviously there are questions about this one, but I think mm-hmm. I'm in the same position. It does do a number of things. I mean, it does create a new definition. It does retroactively validate, at least for some purposes, these opt-outs, blocks future opt-outs without permission. But I can't say those are unrelated or the type of log-rolling concerns that animate the single subject rule. They do, I think, all serve the same basic purpose, which is expansion of the applicability of the renewable energy rules and regulations. So I think I'm okay with it at this point.
Go ahead and offer a motion then that the board find that the measure comprises a single subject and that we proceed to set titles. Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye. Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. And let's turn to the staff draft. Ms. Gomez has displayed it on the screen in the room. Mr. Ramey, any comment about the staff draft?
At least a few moments ago, we were completely okay with it. Always want to read it again carefully while we're having our discussion.
Okay. Ms. Eubanks?
And I have a problem with the staff draft referring to renewable energy standard when the statutory provision that's being amended by this measure is dealing with more than just renewable energy. And so whether or not we need to change it to the terminology about the eligible energy resources, which isn't terribly descriptive. I think in the earlier measure where we were dealing with this issue, we talked about, I don't know, certain or specific electric energy resources or something along those lines. So I think it's inaccurate to have renewable energy standard in there because it's broader than that.
Yeah. I'll give Mr. Ramey another chance in a moment, but is there testimony on the staff draft, Mr. Newman?
Chris Newman, Greenberg Troyer, on behalf of Tri-State again. And I think you just touched on the first concern is whether we have a catchphrase or something that we understand when we say Colorado's renewable energy standard. Section 124 itself has several standards, and I presume that the intended meaning is the standard relevant to municipally owned utilities or cooperative electric associations would apply. And perhaps to make that clear, you would say something to the effect, deleting Colorado's line 2, and after standard in line 2, adding the language applicable to municipally owned utilities and cooperative electric associations. And then one other change in line 4 on the right side where it says prohibiting a provider. I think right of the framework, the way to say this might be prohibiting the members of those providers. It has to do with the mechanics of opting out.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Singer.
Kent Singer with the Colorado Rural Electric Association. We've got a couple issues also with the staff draft of the title. And I think it's one of the same issues that Mr. Newman raised. You know, if you were to read this, at least my take of reading this, you would come to the conclusion that perhaps there is not currently a renewable energy standard applicable to co-ops, for instance. I mean, we've got to make, it seems to me an important thing to do here is to make clear that there is a standard. As Mr. Newman pointed out, there's a standard for co-ops and munis. There's a different standard for IOUs. And so I think to clarify this, it would be important to talk about the fact that this is amending the application of the standard that is currently applicable to municipally owned utilities and co-ops so that there's not some confusion that there is no standard today. So that's one point. The second question I've got here, and it goes to the response that the proponents gave, I think, during the review and comment hearing. I'm not clear as to whether their purpose here is to say that all utilities have to meet the same standard, the 30% that the legislature just adopted in House Bill 1001 this legislative session. there was some give and take at the review and comment hearing that, in fact, that is what they intend, that there should be no applicability of the Muni and Co-op standard, the lesser standard, if this thing were adopted. So if that's their intent, I sure want to clarify that that's not what the measure does. I don't read the measure as amending the right sections of 124 to accomplish that. So I'm just unclear about that, because, like I said, in the review and comment procedure, they indicated, I believe, that they wanted the new increased standard to apply to all utilities. But the question was asked, then why didn't you amend 124.1c? And they just said, we think this trumps 124.1c, and I don't think it does. So that's one point, and I'd be glad to answer questions on that. I've got another question about this exemption language in here. I know it's really confusing, but the way this is currently written, it talks about the existing exemption for certain municipally owned and cooperatively owned utilities as though that's the same exemption, and it's not. I think the exemption we're talking about there is the exemption for the 40,000 and less municipals. They're wanting to take that out so it applies to all municipals, but there is no exemption in the statute for any size of co-op. All co-ops have to comply with a portfolio standard. I guess the exemption here we're talking about has to do with the jurisdiction of the Public Utilities Commission with respect to rules, which they're also saying co-ops, now you will be subject to commission rules, whereas the current statute says no. So there are several points here that I think need clarification. And again, to me, from my perspective, for the distribution co-ops, the one of most concern is whether or not the purpose of this is to say that there is, in fact, one renewable energy standard. It's 30%. All utilities have to comply with it. We certainly don't think that's what the measure accomplishes in the way it amends the law, and don't think that the ballot title ought to imply that if that's what's intended here.
Ms. Eubanks?
Actually, I have a couple of questions for you in terms of your last point. So to say that the standard that's applicable now to all qualifying retail utilities under this measure, that's something that isn't provided in the measure itself. I mean, all it's doing is dealing with what is a qualifying retail utility. Is that your argument? That it's not in terms of whether or not this makes, you know, an increased standard applicable to all of them, that's a function of other law that's not affected by this measure at all?
Well, right. I mean, I believe the proponents, and they can correct me if I'm wrong, interpret the revisions they're proposing to 124 to accomplish the higher standard, the applicability of the higher standard to all utilities. At least that was the response in review and comment. But 124.1c is not amended, so the lesser standard for co-ops and munis is still in the law. And my point simply is that in the ballot title, I want to make it clear that we're only applying these new provisions to the standard as it applies to municipally owned and cooperatively owned utilities, not just a renewable energy standard. If you just talk about a renewable energy standard, it seems to me it could be confused by the voter that is the new 30% standard. I don't know if that was responsive to your question or not.
Somewhat. I guess I'm asking, is it even accurate to have in the title as to what standard applies? I mean, that it's changing the status of certain entities for purposes of the standard, and whatever that standard is, whether it's different standards depending on different entities. My question is, instead of concerning the application of the standard, I mean, whether it's an application as that a standard applies rather than what standard applies. In terms of whether it's an increased standard or the standard that you state currently exists for co-ops and municipally owned utilities. Is that?
Well, I just think it needs to be made clear, I think Mr. Newman proposed some language modifying the staff draft to talk about the standard that's applicable to municipally owned and cooperative electric associations. I think that's a good addition to make it clear that's the only standard we're talking about. We're not, so there's no confusion that we're somehow talking about applying a portfolio standard that not only is applicable to the smaller municipal utilities, those under 40,000 customers, but that it's limited to the standard and current law for both municipal utilities and co-ops. I'm just trying to make sure that no one could misread that into thinking they're voting for something which creates a 30% standard for all utilities. Because when I read this, I could come to that conclusion.
And then my other question for you is, based on conversations on earlier measures, there's always seems to be significance to talking about municipally owned utilities and then the cooperative electric associations. And I'm a little concerned into the staff draft. It sort of lumps it all together. Would you feel more comfortable in terms of municipally owned and cooperatively owned utilities? Would you prefer the language to be referring to cooperative electric associations rather than
yes,
as a utility?
Yes, I mean, that's a statutorily defined term for what a distribution co-op is, and Tri-State for that matter.
Okay.
So I agree with that, that it should be cooperative electric association as opposed to a cooperatively owned utility.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Johnson, let me go to Mr. Johnson, and then we'll come back to you, Mr. Newman. Did you have anything else, Mr. Singer?
No,
okay.
Craig Johnson on behalf of the Colorado Municipal Utilities Association. The one thing I think that is missing from the staff draft is that there are three things that this initiative does. It broadens the definition, it eliminates the opt-out, and it creates new authority for the PUC. So there has to be something in there that advises the voters, if they approve this, that they are going to be subjecting municipal utilities to the jurisdiction of the PUC. The two of the three things are described in there, but that third one, and I think that's very important and would be important to the voters to know, is not, and we need to incorporate some language that advises them of that change.
Thank you. Mr. Newman.
Just to follow on an earlier point about the catchphrase issue, by saying Colorado's renewable energy standard, we sort of give the impression that these people haven't done what all the rest of us are doing, and it proves the point that we really need to be specific because there is an existing standard. It's unfair to characterize it as a bunch of people who have met no standard and should get up with the rest of us. And I agree with the last point made that we should add at the end something like, and granting to the Colorado Public Utilities Commission new authority to regulate municipally owned utilities and cooperative electric associations, that you don't need that authority to accomplish the goal they have in mind. They've done it nonetheless, and it's important that the voters understand that.
Mr. Ramey, would you like to respond to any of the comments?
I don't think I have any particular response.
Okay.
So we have a debate about it at this point, but I'm not sure that we object to a lot of the suggestions. One thing we do want to do, I do want to make this clear. The text of the measure is what absent review and comment, our intent may vary from what we thought we were accomplishing in the discourse at review and comment. I don't know, but at the end of the day, the plain wording of the measure says, really don't want to see something in the title that is different from that, just because we may have. Maybe more receptive to some of these changes.
Thank you. Okay, so I'll turn to board discussion and see if there's any changes to the staff draft.
Ms. Eubanks.
To deal with the issue about the reference to renewable energy standard, and also in terms of this whole discussion about what this measure does in terms of what standard they would be subject to, I would suggest striking the language on line 2, Colorado's renewable energy standard, and replace it with existing electric resource standards. Because then whatever standards apply, I don't think there's any question that it's not creating a new standard. It's just whatever standards apply, that they're being applied to all providers. And I think that the electric resource standards, that's the terminology that we used in the earlier measure. So I'd move that change.
I'll second that. Further discussion?
My only question is about the word existing, whether specific, whether it suggests we're kind of locking in.
What's in the
what
statute?
What it really does is applies statutory and perhaps regulatory electric resource standards that are set elsewhere in statute or by rule. So I question using existing there. And either take it out or replace it with certain or specified, or I was going to, I think specified is what we used earlier. And that was sort of where I was heading.
I would modify my motion to reflect that change.
Okay. Further discussion? Mr. Ramey?
Golden, the law just raised a very good point. I don't know the answer to this. Electric resource standards, that phrase, I frankly don't know if there is any way broader. If so, we don't want to go there. That's not the intent. I don't think that's the effect of the statute either. I wish I could give you an answer to this question. I'm not aware of anywhere else. An electric resource standard appears in title.
That's why I was a little bit concerned with just deleting existing to it.
But existing, in terms of a time frame, doesn't bother me. It'll be what exists on the effective date. But I am bothered, and I guess mostly by my own ignorance, that somewhere lurking under some stone there may be some electric resource standard.
Well, that's why I think saying specified, there was some thought about just leaving it as electric resource standards, and I think that would have really raised the problem you're suggesting. Here I think we tell the voter, if you know of some other electric resource standards and you're concerned about which ones these we're talking about, the measure will tell you that it's the ones in 124. So I think this addresses that concern, in my view.
Mr. Golden Dubois?
That's specifically why we actually used the language from existing statute and chose to use the renewable energy standard, because that is very specific and does apply to a variety of different types of resources. And the standard, of course, does deal with eligible energy resources, but it also has a variety of other implications in terms of how that is applied. And that's why we specifically use that, because it does delineate a variety of specific steps and actions and resources that can be used. So I guess I think it is much tighter to keep it with the renewable energy standard, whether the word Colorado's in there or not, but I think, you know, there is a specific reference within statute that would outline the parameters of this.
I think we had just run into the same problem that came up before, which is that 124 is maybe in kind of lay terms is a renewable energy law, but it actually addresses more than that. And since this addresses all of 124, I don't think I'm willing to use in the title a subset of it.
Well, there's a motion before us, and if there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Further changes to the staff draft? Ms. Eubanks.
I'd like to clarify the types of utilities and co-ops. So the language on line 4, after municipally owned, I'd like to insert utilities. Then I would like to strike on that same line, cooperatively owned utilities. And substitute cooperative electric associations. I would move that change.
Second. Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks.
And then on line 6, I think, again, we have to deal with the reference to renewable energy standard. And I would strike that language. And actually, I'd probably take out the also before renewable energy standard. And substitute certain electric resource standards.
Got a motion?
I so move.
Second. Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any other changes to the staff draft?
I just have one suggestion or thing I think of. This second sentence is troubling me, and there were recommendations of how to try to explain it that I'm not sure any of them are satisfactory. But my thought was what we might be able to do is on line 4 after existing exemption say – from from the specified electric resource standards and Public Utilities Commission regulation or something like that, or regulation by the Public Utilities Commission.
Should we try it?
Sure. So existing exemption from the specified standards, I think, is enough. And then I'm not sure whether and or is better. And, I guess, regulation by the Public Utilities Commission.
Okay to me.
I mean, that reflects, I think, the ambiguity about that second sentence that exists in the measure itself. You could read that title to say, hey, this subjects them to every bit of PUC regulation, which is broader than the stated intent, but I think that is an accurate reflection of the measure.
So I think I kind of like that, I guess, even though it adds something.
Ms. Eubanks?
If we make that change, then we may want to revisit the language on line 7, because then I think we could use the same sort of terminology about specified standards instead of saying certain electric resource standards, to change that so it all...
I'm not sure, though.
Oh, that they're the same? Okay.
Well, no, actually, yes. Originally, I was going to question whether that's accurate. But I think you're right, that it is only these same specified standards that have the limitation on opting out. So I think that's right.
So,
it's the exact same standards. So instead of certain electric resource standards, you just say, on line 7, you just say the specified standards again?
Yes. And I think it's consistent throughout.
No, just the specified standards. Instead of certain electric resource, you just say the specified on line 7. Yeah.
Is that a motion?
I move that change.
I'll second. Ms. Eubanks seconded. Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Let's look at how it would read. Take a clean look at it.
I only wonder if in the language I added on line 4, adding another from between and regulation might clarify.
Same question. I'll move the insertion of the word from there as shown on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any other changes to the staff draft? Is there a motion to adopt the staff draft as amended?
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That completes action on number 95, and the time is 2:47 p.m. So let's then move to number 96.
Mr. Chairman, Edward Randy, opponents, Roswitz. I don't think we have any specific comments.
Right. Any questions for proponents about number 96? If not, then let's turn to the question of whether it complies with the single subject requirement. Anyone wish to testify on that issue? Mr. Newman.
Chris Newman, Greenberg Traurig again on behalf of Tri-State. And we have several concerns related to the single subject issue. We believe that among the subjects addressed by proposed initiative 96 are the following. It has the purpose and effect of invalidating prior opt-out actions taken by cooperative electric associations under Article 9.5 of the Utility Code. It grants the PUC new authority to regulate municipally owned utilities, which is not relevant or germane to the question of whether there should be a vote to bind the entities to renewable standards. It grants new local authority for cities and counties and
In subparagraph 3, it goes as far as giving authority to subdivisions without explaining what that might mean. These authorities don't presently exist and substantially expand the regulatory reach of the PUC. This initiative also, we believe, grants extraterritorial authority. And that is to say, there are several municipal municipalities who serve or acquire electricity from beyond their borders that would be swept up in this. And it begs the question whether the electorate of a particular city might bind ratepayers outside of that city, which authority is not presently with the PUC or the cities or counties at issue. It grants the PUC new authority also to regulate cooperative electric associations whose members have elected to opt out of the regulation. I mentioned earlier, but it's worth mentioning again, this authority to regulate subdivisions, what that might mean, whether it's political subdivision and suffers from better clarity, or subdivision in the land use context, or some limited set of citizens who now have the authority. 100 people in the subdivision next door to me can bind the entire city and county of Denver to some renewable standard. That's a substantial expansion of the PUC's authority. It also creates new rate-making standards. Specifically, it suggests the PUC has authority to make sure that equitable rates prevail. And the present standard is the PUC has the authority to make sure rates are just, reasonable, and non-discriminatory. It's not clear what equitable might mean and whether discriminatory is looked at in the context of whether the subdivision electing coverage in the renewable standard should not effectively pay for the entire cost of that standard. And should that cost be spread to the entire city or county or whatever the geographic scope might be in order to now make rates that are not discriminatory or somehow equitable. And this new standard, it was not necessary to achieve the function of binding the municipality or the electric cooperative to a renewable energy standard, and it's a new authority that's a substantial expansion of existing PUC authority. For these reasons, we submit this initiative does not present a single subject.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson?
Craig Johnson on behalf of the Colorado Association of Municipal Utilities. Again, we join with Tri-State in their concerns about the single subject nature of this initiative. I think it's pretty clear that there's at least three separate things that this initiative attempts to accomplish. One is the stated purpose of where an entity has opted out to allow members or ratepayers to opt back in. That's what I understand the primary purpose of this initiative to be. However, it creates two new powers with respect to the Public Utilities Commission. First, to require a retail utility to submit a resource acquisition plan. Now that's, again, something that municipals are already doing. That they don't report to the PUC, they set their own schedules and their acquisition plans. That's their own responsibility. Now they're going to be dictated to by the PUC about how that's implemented. But I think even more far afield, as Mr. Newman noted, is it creates an entirely new regime of rate-making authority with the PUC. It gives the PUC the authority, if a municipal entity opts in, it gives the PUC the authority to regulate rates. And that's something the PUC has never had the authority to do with respect to municipal entities. And it's not something that's necessary or even any way related to the opt-in. It's one thing to say that the ratepayers in this district, we would like to opt in, we'd like to have more renewable energy. That's fine. But to have the PUC then come in and say, and now the PUC is going to regulate your rates, that's an entirely separate and distinct power. Again, it violates the Colorado Constitution, and it shows that this initiative violates the single subject requirement.
Thank you. Anyone else on the single subject question? Mr. Singer?
Pretty
much the same arguments from Tri-State and KMU, but I've held my powder on these single subject issues until this one. I think this one does cover an extraordinarily broad category of subjects with relation to public utility law and how it applies to co-ops. This whole business about a retail utility submitting a resource acquisition plan really is an extraordinary new power to the commission. That is a incredibly complex and burdensome process that retail utilities other than Xcel typically and Black Hills aren't currently subject to the commission's jurisdiction for resource planning. In fact, they typically have little control over generation assets. They're just distribution co-ops. And then also the provision about the commission regulating rates and ensuring equitable rates goes, in my view, way beyond what is required with respect to renewable standards and the ability to petition to be included by cities and counties. So we just think that there's a very broad category of new authority in the commission that does implicate the single subject rule. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Ramey for a response.
Again, very briefly, particularly in response to the figure, I guess I would say, we could debate at some length the wisdom, the complexity, the newness, the burdensomeness of that we are proposing, and he may be correct, or not. Whatever they are, they are purely designed for implementation, opt-in provisions for the I should say subdivision is intended to be used in a political sense, not in the land. In the land. The most of the implementation provisions are designed to prevent the primary purpose, as I think Mr. Johnson stated correctly, as the first purpose that he mentioned of this measure, to prevent it from being undercut by discriminatory rate setting in the wake of a subdivision, a municipality, or whatever, electing to opt in. Doing so practically, but except for the first purpose, again, I think Mr. Johnson accurately stated, everything else, wise, extensive, stupid, however people may want to characterize it, burdensome, and I don't want to quibble with anybody about any of that stuff, but it is all designed to.
Can I just ask a couple follow-up questions?
Not sure I can answer them.
Well. They're not too complicated, I don't think. The way I understand this, so say you've got a utility that covers 20 towns and counties, and it's opted out. If one of those towns, cities, says, you know, we want to use more renewable energy resources, and votes to send a petition to the PUC. Then, as I understand it, the PUC requires the utility to submit a plan, a resource acquisition plan, so that whatever percentage of their electricity that the overall utility gets, they can say, well, we're getting X percent now. So, say you're Boulder, you want to opt into this. Just for example.
Where did that come
from? I grew up in Boulder, so. So, say Boulder opts in and is 5% of the overall utilities market or whatever. Then they submit a plan saying, well, we get 5% or some percent of our 5% from renewable energy. That part I think I understand. The rate making then is where I'm a little bit confused. If the utility then says, but increasing our renewable or whatever we're calling it, our energy requirements to these cleaner sources, let's say, is going to cost an extra 20%. What would seem to make sense then is the utility says, okay, so Boulder, you're paying 20% more than everybody else. Is the intention of that section, the second sentence of subsection 3, that in fact the utility, the commission could say, well, it's not really fair to make Boulder pay 20% more when now everybody's getting some benefit from this, and so everybody's rates are going to go up a little bit within the, everybody who uses this, even though only Boulder or whoever opted back in. Is that the intent, or what is the intent of this rate making authority?
I think you're close to the right track. The intent is to ensure that if, let's use a different example, one where there is a cooperative utility and the cooperative opts out, and then one of the municipalities within that cooperative service territory opts back in and decides that they want to have some percentage of their energy come from renewable energy resources. What we are trying to prevent here is retaliatory and discriminatory action that they could take against that specific municipality. So we particularly have the discrimination language in there to ensure that, say that it is a 20% increase in costs, what we want to make sure is that there's not severe retaliation and they say, well, we're going to raise your rates 40%
50%.
Now. And so it is, that is specifically why we felt there was a role for the PUC to implement to ensure that there's not a discriminatory rate regime that's established. It may indeed be fair to charge more for those renewable resources, but
right.
We want to make sure it's not discriminatory.
I see. Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions for Mr. Ramey or Mr. Golden Dubois? Ms. Eubanks.
Mr. Ramey, I'm a little, I don't know, intrigued, I guess, by the citizen initiative.
This measure intrigues me.
I mean,
right.
I'm, you know, just like this measure, I've always thought of initiatives as lawmaking rather than somehow petitioning someone like the PUC to take this action. I mean, it's a different use of initiative for home rule cities, which are constitutionally based, and usually they have the ability to initiate charter amendments and such. And so I guess I'm a little concerned that somehow this is something new and different for home rule cities in terms of a power of initiative.
The example that comes to my mind, I mean, clearly local initiative has constitutionally envisioned 519, I guess.
Right.
If I have it correct. And as applicable by statute to home rule counties, is primarily legislative in nature. There are provisions. One that comes immediately to my mind, I'm not sure why, is in Aspen, for example, charter. They provide for, I can't recall if it's done through initiative petition, referred measure, but it needs to go to a vote of the people, change in use of land acquired for open space purposes. You can't change the use of the property, city-owned land, if the land was initially acquired by the city for open space purposes without submitting it in some fashion. So there are ways in which various municipalities have used what we would, essentially identical to an initiative measure or referendum to get matters before the people. And
but this measure doesn't get a matter before the people.
Well, no.
It's getting a matter before this PUC.
It would come from the people under those circumstances.
But it's a different animal.
It's different from what we're
and usually when you have an initiative, and the one that you gave as an example, it's affecting something that the local government has control over. Land use, their ordinances, their charter, whatever, just like this initiative is proposing to change Colorado's statute. So, right?
I thought that was part of your
my thought in terms of initiatives dealing with lawmaking of some sort. I mean, whether it's ordinances, land use regulations, whatever. But here it's something different because you're petitioning a state entity to take an action.
Maybe I misunderstood and I was responding before exactly the thrust. I think the way this would work, I would quibble with the term lawmaking and probably substitute the term legislation for what you just said. I think what this would mean is that by citizen initiative, the governing body, therefore, would be required to petition the commission. I misunderstood the thrust of your question initially. But, for example, the city council could determine to petition the commission, or if the local government has the initiative power, one way or another, that can be used to compel the governing body
to rather than going directly.
It's not. I didn't understand. I think I do now. That by it wouldn't be that the local residents would be themselves
going to the commission.
Going to the commission through the initiative.
Okay.
I apologize.
I may have misread in terms of you're using the initiative to compel the governing body of the local government to go to the commission. Okay. All right. Thank you.
That clearly is out of the way this should work, to substitute.
So if the governing body doesn't take action in its discretion, then right. The citizens can
okay. compel it to take action.
All right. Thank you.
That's a very good point. Thank you.
Mr. Newman, briefly.
Yeah, briefly, it was suggested that this has to do all with implementation, and I think some of the last lines of questioning disprove that point. To the last issue we were debating, the petition is for the, let's see, may petition the commission to request coverage under the renewable energy standard. So petition the PUC for coverage, which still begs the question whether there's coverage to begin with. And if the purpose is to not only allow a petition but somehow reverse the opt-out or the circumstances in which there is coverage, I think we're getting into multiple subjects. In paragraph 2, the process starts with the submission of a resource acquisition plan, which you heard some of the context for, but the Cooperative Electric Associations and municipalities don't go through this process with the PUC. They do it on their own. And it's not necessary to be at the PUC to affect this change. That is to say, should we be subject to a renewable energy standard or not? And this is a pretty significant new bureaucracy and regulatory program that's already covered by the provisions of the cooperatives. And then the same point with regard to rates. The whole point of opting out is to be the entity that decides when rates are fair, just, and reasonable, to not have the PUC play that function. There's no need, if the purpose is to make people subject to the renewable energy standard, to involve the PUC. It can be done through the process that's already established.
Thank you. Discussion by the board on the question of single subject compliance. Mr. Domenico.
Well, I think this is a conceptually difficult to figure out how this is going to work, given the kind of disconnect between 124, which is based on utilities, and then shifting a standard that applies in 124 to utilities to applying it to cities and counties. I don't putting together one of these resource acquisition plans would be a little bit interesting if you would just say, well, we get 10% of our stuff from renewable resources, and this town only uses 8% of our electricity, so we're going to say all of it goes there. Whether that would be good enough. I think it's a little awkward to call any of this a petition and request when it's all mandatory. But I think it is a single subject. I mean, I think all those things are difficulties of implementation. But Mr. Ramey is right. Whatever the merits of those arguments, I don't think they undermine the idea that this fits within a single subject.
And I would agree with that, yes.
I agree also.
I'll go ahead and move then that the board find that the measure comprises a single subject and proceed to set titles.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff prepared draft that Ms. Gomez is displaying on the screen. Mr. Ramey, any comments on the staff draft?
Mr. Hobbs, I think we only have one. I hesitate to make it because I know this thing is going to morph into something very different. But for accuracy on lines 6 and 7, where it reads, qualifying a retail utility has voted to exempt itself from renewable energy standard, subject to the standard. We're not bringing the utility back in. The way that should read is that has voted to exempt itself from the renewable energy standard to provide that such city or county be included in such renewable energy.
Yeah, that problem exists in a couple of places, actually, including the statement of the single subject.
I think you're correct. We're not bringing the entire utility back in. We're just bringing the political
right.
Subject. Okay, thank you. Other comments on the staff draft? Mr. Newman.
I think we have a similar comment. We offered this in response to an earlier of this set, but it's this concept that comes through what is the context against working, concerning the ability of citizens to request their electric utility be made subject to. And we would offer that it's important to understand the context and that this is effectively reversing a decision or overturning a decision of the utility and its members or customers to opt out. And something like and also that this is a decision not by the citizens but by the governing body. So in line one, the ability of the governing body of a city or county or the citizens of a home rule city or subdivision, which is an important term that's used that we think has different meaning people should understand, to overturn the decision of their electric utility to opt out of. And then again, we're saying Colorado's renewable energy standard, which potentially has some connotations. This would be however we handled it last, but it's the applicable standard for the municipality or the cooperative. And then a little bit later in line four, three to four, allowing the governing body of a city or county or the citizens of a home rule city, we would add, or a subdivision, which is substantively an expansion and an important difference. We would clarify the end of line five. Utility that has voted to exempt itself, it's probably better said, the utility whose members or consumers have voted to exempt themselves. Lastly, at the end of line seven, which deals with submitting a resource plan, add a clause after the semicolon, speaking to the new authority, the Public Utilities Commission, something to the effect, and granting the Colorado Public Utilities Commission new authority to regulate
municipally-owned utilities and cooperative electric associations, we think is an important distinction and different than the renewable energy standard issue.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Johnson?
I have just a couple of comments. One is on line 7, where it says requiring the utility submit a resource acquisition plan. We would suggest inserting the language to the Public Utilities Commission. And in line 8, and this is similar to Mr. Newman's comment, we'd suggest changing the language of line 8 to say rather than and directing the Colorado Public Utilities Commission to approve, that the language be changed to and granting the Colorado Public Utilities Commission the authority to approve. Since I think that more accurately reflects what the measure would be doing by creating a new grant of authority in the PUC.
Thank you. Anyone else on the staff draft? If not, then I'll turn it over to board discussion.
Can I just make a few suggestions to get us moving?
Sure. So I think in the single subject, it should be changed to concerning the ability of cities and counties. I don't like saying request, because even though that's the language of the measure, everything is actually mandatory. And so I would suggest saying cities and counties to demand. And instead of their electric utility, I would say jurisdiction, their jurisdiction. In this case, I think renewable energy standard or standards is okay, because the measure actually is limited to the renewable energy standards. I don't know about Colorado's. I think I might suggest changing that to statutory energy standards would be, I think, my suggestion. Yes. And I have a correction to something I did before, but I would say statutory there. All right. So up on line 2, I think I would just change their delete their jurisdiction electric utility to they. A space there. I think I might add an S to standard on line 3. I think that's my change to the statement of the single subject.
Looks good to me. You're okay? Why don't you come to the mic and...
So the cities, the counties, the subdivisions, if that means like special districts, they don't have utilities. Some of them have municipally owned utilities. Obviously, in the case of a special district, it gets a little funky saying they be made subject.
Well, I guess we could... that we could change it to their residents be made subject, which I think is the language of Section 1 of the measure.
But remember, the renewable energy standards they specify a certain percentage of the electricity generated be from renewable sources.
Right, and that's why I said before, implementing this is going to be a little bit strange were it to pass, because the standards, existing standards, are utility-based. This would make them jurisdiction-based, and I think that would be awkward, but I think this says what it would actually seek to do, which is apply the renewable energy standards to cities and counties. And if that's awkward, then it's awkward. But I mean, and I'm not, I think we still need to make changes after the in connection therewith language, but I'm just trying to get to that. I'd be willing to add, instead of they, change it to their residents. If that would clarify things, but I'm not sure it's necessary.
I think for purposes of just that part of the title, I think it's okay.
Okay, I'll move those changes then.
I'll second. Ms. Eubanks seconds that. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Mr. Domenico, do you want to keep going with that?
Yeah, I can try. The next change I had was the word petition that is now on line 5. I know that's the language of the measure, but a petition to me is a discretionary, hey, here's what we'd like you to do, and as I read this measure, it's not that at all. It's, here's our vote, we are now, you're now required to take these actions. So again, to maybe go back to demand, that the Colorado Public Utilities Commission require a, and I don't know if we need to use the terms of art here, qualifying retail utility, a utility that is voted to exempt itself from the renewable energy standard, to subject the jurisdiction to the standards. So I guess my only changes then would be to change petition on line 5 to demand or something. And then change on line 7, and to require that, well, I guess on the beginning of line 6, well, well, I guess I question whether six, the that whole long thing on 5-7 is necessary anymore, or if it's just redundant with the clause on line 5. Initiative to demand, I mean, well, to demand that the PUC, what it really does is it allows a city to subject itself to the standards, demand that the PUC require a utility to submit a resource acquisition plan for that jurisdiction, and direct the PUC, I mean, that part I'm not sure how to deal with. But I don't know what that language is adding on lines kind of 5, 6 at the beginning of 7. As it's written, it's not accurate. Can't demand that a utility become subject to the standard. You can demand that your jurisdiction be subject to the standard. And that imposes some duties on your the utility that serves your jurisdiction. But that's explained in the clauses on 7 through 11. Please,
Mr. Ramey?
I'm going in the same direction, Mr. Domenico's. I think what's important to keep going on is demand the Colorado Public Utilities Commission require a qualifying retail utility that is voted to exist. It's important to keep the concept of dealing with qualified retail utilities. Then the language of the staff draft does get having is not one of the required acquisition plan. Part of that in our measure. Where I'm trying to go is if we could somehow skip a few words. Require a qualified retail utility voted to exempt itself from to submit a resource acquisition plan. Move forward from there. Those words in the middle are, I think, what's causing it. Not resubjecting the entire utility.
Right.
Mr. Newman?
Just to follow on your earlier point, they were moving from utility-based to jurisdiction-based. I think that the point that is loosely made here is that a certain subset of the community is opting in, and then the commission will set rates to make sure that the entire community pays in a fair way.
Would it work to just, on line 7, change... voted and delete B and change it to subject residents of the jurisdiction to the standard. Of the jurisdiction. I mean, I agree with Mr. Newman and the other opponents that the injection of the word subdivision in Section 3 is kind of strange and opens it up to some questions, since everywhere else it just talks about jurisdictions. But I can't imagine it's meant or would be interpreted to have such a big substantive change, since it's thrown in there in the middle of kind of a narrow discussion, that it would somehow mean that even though one and only refers to cities and counties, all of a sudden you're talking about every possible subdivision. So I'm sort of leaning towards ignoring the word subdivision.
Maybe for context, remember that even though a subset of citizens is voting, the
utility serving them serves a broader area, right? I mean, so the challenge you have here is that you're letting one subset of, or one class of customer vote to be subject to more expensive renewable energy standard issues, and then spread the cost, which is the last sentence, across the entire rate base in some way that will be determined.
Right, and that's the difficulty I think we're having. I think that at least the part we've tried to adjust is accurate. I think the next clause that starts on 7 and goes on to 8, I don't know if in that section we need to also note that utility doesn't have to comply with the standard overall necessarily, just a resource acquisition plan for the jurisdiction, again, on line 8.
I offer that in line 7, you may want to say to subject its ratepayers, comma, including residents of the jurisdiction. Right or no?
I don't think so. I don't think that's what they intend to subject all of their ratepayers. I do think I would add on line 8 where the cursor is for the jurisdiction, which turns that into basically a quote from section 2 of 28, subsection 2.
Maybe in line 10 is where this thought would go. Rates for all of its customers, comma, including those residents of the jurisdiction.
Well, the confusion there before, I think this gets a little bit to what you're talking about. The problem is, again, the end of line 10 and 11 go back to suggesting that you're subjecting an entire utility to the standard, which is not the case.
Just the cost.
Right. Maybe. But I think what it would, on line 9, if you say directing the PUC to approve a separate tariff for the jurisdiction maintaining just reasonable and non-discriminatory rates for its customers or something like that.
So the way this would work, the tariff is a contract between the utility and the customers. And if you, I think as you just set it up, would have two separate tariffs. You'd have the tariff applicable to those who have not opted in, and then a tariff for those that have. And then you have an issue of whether there's authority to deal with rate equity.
That's the way I understand it, yeah, that if your utility covers multiple jurisdictions, one of which has followed this, the PUC will set a separate tariff for the people within the jurisdiction that opted in. When it sets that, I think what the reasonable, just, non-discriminatory language is meant to do, as I understood the response to my previous question, is basically let someone in that jurisdiction who says, this is only going to cost an extra 10%, and you're imposing on us a 40% increase, that's unjust and discriminatory. So I can have it overturned in court, I assume. You have to go back and match the additional costs to this tariff. That's the way I understand it, is that you would, in fact, have two tariffs. have a chairman in there.
Oh, sorry. Mr. Golden-Dubois.
I think that assuming the establishment of two different tariffs goes beyond what it is that we propose here, we propose that it is the Public Utilities Commission job to it is their job to determine and to make sure that there are just, reasonable, and non-discriminatory rates for all customers. That does not necessarily mean that there are separate tariffs for different customers. So, for example, we are fast approaching a time when some renewable energy resources actually approach or will even be below the cost of traditional sources of energy. And so what is just, reasonable, and non-discriminatory may in fact be different at different times. And so to assume a higher tariff is not necessarily correct. And so I would say leaving that to the discretion of the Public Utilities Commission, which has routinely dealt with such issues in rate cases, is probably the best way to go rather than to specify that there are separate tariffs.
Well, the measure itself specifies that, quote, the commission will approve a separate tariff for the jurisdiction or subdivision that has petitioned to be included in the blah, blah, blah. Now, it may be that the numbers are the same, but I think we just use that language from the measure, even though it could turn out to be the same or, who knows, maybe less.
Well, I think that is what's there right now, to approve a separate tariff and to obtain just, reasonable, and non-discriminatory rates for customers.
Yeah, and I agree. I think my proposal would only maybe be a separate tariff for the jurisdiction is probably the only suggestion I have, which is, again, a quote from the text. And just clarifies, again, that this isn't – that the whole utility is now got to have a – meet this standard, just got to meet it for this jurisdiction.
Now for one last thought. I think his comment that the PUC has to have authority to look at everybody's rates proves the multiple subject issue, because if we're going to have authority over people who are exempt and those who vote to opt back in, those are two different issues. You don't need authority over those who are exempt to deal with the proposal that allows people to opt in and then be covered. Regulation. I think it's right. How can you have equitable or fair rates if you have people opt in and create two classes but have no authority to regulate one of the classes?
So my suggestion, again, would be to add that same language for the jurisdiction after the word tariff on line 9. And I do understand the concern just stated about whether this would allow the raising of rates in the rest of a utility's jurisdictions. I don't interpret it that way and would have a number of problems with both the title. But I don't understand it to work that way. That I don't think the PUC could say, well, we're going to have to raise this county's rates because they've opted in, and to maintain non-discriminatory rates or just rates, we're also going to raise the rest of this utility's rates. I think that would be overreading the authority given in this section, and that's not how I read it.
Can I make a suggestion? This probably is, I hope this doesn't set us back, but I'm concerned about the complexity of the language between basically lines 4 through 8. mean, I'm okay. I think we need to say something about separate tariff and the non-discriminatory rates. So I'm inclined to leave something like that, maybe along the lines that Mr. Domenico suggested. I'm not so sure we need to include the clause that requires the utility to submit a resource acquisition plan. Maybe that's an important feature, but I haven't quite understood that to be particularly important. But what comes before that, after the in connection therewith, is just awfully complicated. And I guess a suggestion that I was going to make, and it probably does injury somehow, but to try to simplify that, to say that after the and in connection therewith, requiring that any qualifying retail utility that has exempted itself from the standards, what are we, the renewable energy standards or statutory renewable energy standards, shall be subject to such standards within any city and county that makes such a request to the Public Utilities Commission. So I'm trying to see if there's a simpler way to say that basically with respect to any utility that's exempted itself, they shall be subject to the standards within any city and county that has made such a request to the PUC. Ms. Eubanks?
And I was just going to say that in terms of the language on lines 4 and 5, based on my discussion with Mr. Ramey, I don't think that that language is accurate, because that gives that impression that the citizens are petitioning the PUC. And offhand, I don't think how it happens is that important. And so, you know, depending on if we go your direction, but if we don't, just even to change that language up there to say allowing a city or county to demand and get rid of all that other language, because I don't think it's correct as it's stated right now anyway. But if we're going to take this whole different approach, your approach solves that issue. But at least removing that language would help simplify what we've got right now.
And if it works, that was part of my goal, was to try to get out of that conundrum about dealing with petitions and requests
and
so forth.
Yeah, I don't even think we want to go there anyway. So, you know, if we say just allowing a city or county to demand, whether that helps clean.
Mr. Ramey? I'm sorry,
if the initiative process exists, it exists. If it doesn't, it doesn't. So
right.
I want to second what she's saying. I think that language becomes surplus.
But the way that the staff draft is written makes it sound like it's the governing body going to the PUC or the citizens going directly to the PUC rather than, you know, the governing body taking an action, whether on their own initiative or through the citizens' petition process. And you know, those details I just don't think are important anyway. And so I'd just rather get rid of it so it's at least accurate and hopefully simplified. Now, it still may not help deal with the complexity of everything else that's there, but.
Well, I think it was accurate before, but I'm happy to get rid of it. I would suggest, getting rid of B or and replacing it with A on line at the beginning of line 4. I guess I understand why the language about this only applying to those utilities that have voted to opt out is in the measure. On the other hand, if your utility is already subjected itself to these, I don't understand. You're not going to have one of these votes there. So, I suppose in theory you could have a preemptive vote if the measure were written differently, which you can't under the way the measure is written. I'm just not sure that's really all that material.
Mm-hmm.
what's material, I would think, to your typical voter is that you can, your city or county can demand that the PUC require your utility to subject residents of your jurisdiction to the standards. So I wonder if all that language about qualifying retail utility that's voted to exempt itself is necessary. And if you could just say, allowing a city or county to demand that the PUC require utilities, well, or even just that the PUC subject residents of the jurisdiction to the standards. I wonder if that captures what the measure does, captures all the material aspects of what the measure does in terms of materiality for voters as opposed to lawyers.
I think that's kind of where I was trying to get to.
I think it is. To demand, I mean, I don't even know if you need the language about the PUC up there.
Mm-hmm.
To demand allowing a city or county, you probably do, to demand that the PUC subject residents of the jurisdiction to the standards. Then you would have to add some explanation in the next clause about what utility you're talking about, requiring a utility serving the jurisdiction or something like that. No. Not the way it is now. If you add a 2, you'd have to change something else.
Okay. Never mind.
So then the next change you'd have to make is on line 7, requiring a utility serving residents of the jurisdiction. I think I would use the A just because I'm not savvy enough to know whether some jurisdictions have multiple utilities. And if you use A, I think that covers both possibilities. I think then at the beginning of line 8, it would say serving the jurisdiction.
Well, let me ask 2 questions. I wasn't sure that this was important to state that they that the utility would have to submit a resource acquisition plan. It seems like that's a detail of implementation to me, but maybe it is important. But if so, I mean, what is now line 7, is it really accurate to say subjects the residents of the jurisdiction to the standard? I mean, is that good enough?
I'm sorry,
okay.
What's that?
I'm sorry, I'm bouncing around. With line 7, it says to demand the PUC subject the residents, and I'm focusing on the word residents, to subject residents of the jurisdiction to the standard. I mean, it's really kind of the utility.
Measure says.
No, it's not. That's the problem.
Oh, okay.
It's not the utility.
To request the residents of their jurisdictions be covered by the requirements of the renewable energy standard. That's the language.
Okay. I mean, I guess I was reading coverage as a little different than.
Covered.
I don't know. But maybe it's close enough then to what the measure says. Anyway,
Well, where I thought you were going to, what I thought you might be suggesting is on line 7, you could get rid of one of the jurisdiction clauses by saying subject its residents to the standards, and they're on line 7. Because once we get rid of the deleted language, it will be clearer, I think, that you're talking about the city or county that made this demand. So you could, on line 7, say subject its, and then delete of the jurisdiction.
Okay.
I was with you on whether the whole clause about resource acquisition plan is necessary or whether that's kind of assumed within the idea of being subject to the standard, but I guess I'd lean towards keeping it in there at the moment.
Okay. Ms. Eubanks?
Because we've struck the language on line 6 and 7 that specified renewable energy standard, although we have that up in the single subject statement, whether the standard on line 7 needs to be the specify standards, so at least refers back to the reference of renewable energy standards without restating it all. So it would be to the specified, similar to what we did on that other measure.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think standards would be plural.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then whether also on line 9, say specified standards, and also on line 12.
Well, I was going to suggest just deleting
I take that out.
Everything after rates on line 11 and 12.
That's fine.
Mr. Newman?
Just one quick point. Everywhere we say cities and counties, I wonder if we shouldn't instead say cities, counties, or subdivisions. Because I think when you talk about in paragraph 3, the petitions are coming from jurisdictions or subdivisions. And in the initial paragraph, it's cities and counties at the discretion of their governing bodies, which presumably would include every governing body within a city or a county, which would include special districts or whatever else would be a subdivision that could petition.
Yeah, as I said, I just can't. I don't read it that way. I mean, I know that's subdivision. I wish it weren't in there because it just makes it confusing. But I think it's accurate as it is.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the language says refers to a jurisdiction or subdivision that has petitioned. And it seems to me it's cities and counties that can petition. But
So then we want to strike the language on I
would include rates, but strike the rest.
So we have a series of changes after the in connection therewith that have been proposed. Maybe we ought to look at a clean version, Ceci.
this makes me wonder again if we should get rid of the reference to the PUC on line 4. And then you can just write allowing our city or county to demand that its residents be subject to the specified standards. And then be it.
Can you say allowing a city or county to subject its residents? Go even further?
Good.
Then, in terms of the terminology we use in the single subject statement, need to be changed also, because we that they may be made subject.
So, in line 2, the ability of cities and counties to subject.
I kind of like having it in there in one place or the other. I don't know which. Okay. It might be better to do it the opposite, though. Just to at least suggest that there's kind of a bureaucratic process here. I like it the way it is, actually.
Okay.
I like it so much, I'm going to move that we adopt the staff draft as amended.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, And of course, it's the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause, but this would become the draft or the titles. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That completes action on number 96, and the time is 3:56 p.m. Thank you.
Can I take a short break?
Yeah, let's take about a 5-minute break.
Yes.
Okay.
To the bathroom,
yes. I'll tell you what. Let me just give
you. Did I just swipe it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Kent. Good to see you, sir.